You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Do you work here? Obviously, yes. How many people you know wear a name tag recreationally? What, you think I'm behind the counter because I got lost? Do I work here? No, I'm just dressed like this because I'm going to the midnight premiere of IKEA the movie.
Good morning, Swiverl, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Tuesday, May 25th. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling with the homie Tass Mellis.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Tass. We got my top shot hot boy and fellow freak, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o.
Hey-yo. Hey-yo.
The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
Lily. Last but not least, making the magic happen, JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team for joining us live right now on YouTube. Take a second, smash that like button, and then later leave your comments below. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. Really appreciate it. Send in your questions and your comments for tomorrow's new Beach Steppin' podcast. If you're new around here, every week, or usually every week, we hit the beach to read your NBA questions and comments. It's the only place to go to read your tweets and your emails. So email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com, or tweet them in at nodunksinc. And finally, go grab your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com. Thank you to everybody who went and grabbed themselves a limited edition icy blue wedgie shirt. These were a big hit, at least according to our Twitter followers. People were liking these, grabbing a few of them. So thanks to everybody that went and got one of those limited edition wedgie t-shirts. Those are all gone now. They were only available for 12 hours there on Monday. But thank you, thank you, thank you. Lots of other good stuff, though. Always available over at nodunks.com. Okay, well, let's get to it. Not the greatest games, but we'll break them down anyway. First one, we'll start with the second game. Jokic scoring 38. Nuggets beat the Blazers 128-109 to even the series at one game apiece. Lili, take it away.
Well, I think this was actually a good game. I mean, if you look at the final score, you think maybe a blowout of there. It was a good win by the Nuggets, but I think it was a little bit tighter than that because it was a pretty tense one. We had quite a few technical fouls, a little bit of pushing and shoving going on, everyone getting involved in a game that the Nuggets had to win, really. This was a huge game for them in the series, and at halftime, they were up 12 and looking good, but they had one big problem lurking, and that was Damian Lillard was on fire, had 32 points on eight threes in that first half. So the Nuggets made a big move to start the second half, and I think this is a huge move by Mike Malone. He put Aaron Gordon on Lillard at the start of the second half, and it worked really well because not only could Lillard sort of, it was harder for him to shoot and get shots off, but it really just disrupted the entire Blazers offense, and that I think was key because even though the Nuggets actually only outscored the Blazers by 2 points in that third period, but they were up 12, and it just prevented Portland and Lillard going on one of those big pushes like they made in game one there. So it was really, really important, I think, for the Nuggets to hold on to that lead and preserve it, and then they did close it out in the fourth quarter. And what I did notice, or what I guess I didn't notice, is Terry Stotts didn't really react to that either. He sort of just didn't make any changes. Lillard's talked about it after the game saying, you know, we're going to have to do some off-ball stuff there because Aaron Gordon, about 6 inches or so bigger than Lillard. He's very athletic. He's very quick. And this is exactly the sort of assignment that the Nuggets wanted Aaron Gordon for as well. Potentially throw him out there and just put a bit of a blanket on him. And I thought it was great. So, look, we know Lillard is going to bounce back. I mean, bounce back. He still had 42 points in the game. But what I mean is we know he's going to make adjustments and still get his shots off. But if you're Mike Malone and Nuggets, you may have found a way here just to sort of really almost be like, if Lillard goes off, then the other guys don't, or vice versa, to get themselves back into this series and take a lead. Because remember, a few years ago, this is huge, I think, against the Pelicans, what they did against Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum was basically put all the pressure on him and see if those other guys could beat the Blazers. Now, things have changed. That's a few years ago. But if you're the Denver Nuggets, I think game three, you absolutely start Aaron Gordon on Damian Lillard from the start and see if you can really get into his grill there and slow him down, because I thought that was great. Jokic was fantastic. He had 25 points himself in the first half. Mm-hmm. But I think the real takeaway from this one for me is that the Nuggets might have found a way just to make life difficult for Lillard. And if you can do that, then I think it makes life difficult for the Blazers in general.
Yeah, was this a fun game to watch, Tass? I mean, Lee said it. We had the superstars going off there in Jokic and Lillard. But, man, there were a lot of free throws and a lot of video reviews and very little flow. I don't know. Maybe it was because we had just watched 8 games over the weekend, had that the earlier blowout, which we'll get to with the butt. I don't know. It was a slog, man. It was tough mm-hmm. watching, I thought, which is a shame. I get the officials are trying to get control of the game and all that. They don't want anything getting out of hand. But, like, we should, it was bad. It was gross, to be honest.
Yeah, we got our high on the weekend, right? Yeah. We got our drugs. We got 8 great games. 8 of them. I mean, they were basically 8 for 8. Although, you know, people hyping up that Nets-Celtics game a little too much. But anyways, it was a solid 8-pack. And then, yeah, we hit a little rut with the Bucks and the Heat. And then this one as well. It was the video reviews, really. Unless mm-hmm. unless you like the super physical contact, guys falling all over the place. You know, they were getting a little bit chippy. If you're into that, then it kind of was enjoyable. Melo giving a two-handed shove to the back of Nikola Jokic. Jermichael Green, Nuggets big man, doing some weird stuff through these first two games. He grabbed his junk in the first game, you know, like men are wont to do. We're going to have a fight, so let me grab my junk and get into your face. You know, that was weird. And, he got into it in game number two as well. The Campazzo-Lillard thing going on. It's endless. I think it is fun here having it in game two, but yeah, there was a billion video reviews. The thing is, you know, sometimes when you have the road team upset in game one, it's just bound to happen that the home team is going to win game two. And, you know, I didn't see the supporting cast coming like this for the Nuggets, but that was really the turnaround. So it's not really a sexy storyline coming out of this game. Mm-hmm. Nikola Jokic was awesome in the first two games. He had 34, then he had 38. Their second star, Michael Porter Jr., couldn't even hit a shot in this game. He had a slower game, a worse game in this game. But really, no one's going to get super-duper excited about Paul Millsap showing up or Monte Morris showing up. But it was the Nuggets bench that changed this game. They
Give
had
me some
to
Shaq Harrison talk, Tess.
I love Shaq Harrison.
There we go.
And it's great to have a man named Shaquille in the league. So they really needed somebody to get in Lillard's grill. And Shaquille Harrison, little spark plug, didn't play in the first game. And that's exactly what they did. First half, second quarter, they saw Lillard going off. You know, Lee mentioned the numbers. They needed somebody to get under his skin. And it worked. And, that was the one little scuffle I didn't mention. But he was getting into Lillard's grill. Like, they're definitely trying to get under his fingernails as much as possible. Yeah, and they're going to throw every body at him. And, yeah, it's great to have a Shaquille. And, you know, the Nuggets commentators going a little over the top when Shaquille Harrison, he got a little bit of a steal, a little bit of a turnover. Then he threw it down with two hands. And Chris Marlowe on the call said, dunking it like the old Shaquille used to dunk it. Too much? Probably. Too much? But whatever.
Probably.
Whatever. The Nuggets bench just showed up for this one. What are they going to do in game three and game four is the question.
Yeah. Millsap and Morris combining for 27. And then all the other starters there alongside Jokic also scoring. I thought the game was won, actually, Trey. With like a minute 50 to go in that first half, you guys brought up Shaq, because that's when Lillard was going insane. Like, he hit another three there, like sort of double teamed on the side, didn't matter. He was in the groove, knocks it down, timeout. Okay, holy crap, this guy's going supernova. It had cut the lead to 4, again, about a minute 50 to go in the first half. But the Nuggets came out of a timeout. Hey, here's a game plan, get the ball to Jokic. Just calmly hit like a jumper from the free throw line. Okay, that gets it back to 6. And then, yeah, Shaq Harrison is in there, and he was all over Dame on that possession. Dame fell over. Then he was, like, doing crazy prevent defense, just trying anything he could, Harrison was, to not get the ball back in Dame's hands. In the end, it ended with, like, McCollum, a contested jumper on the side. He misses that. Denver gets the board. They push it. You know, not the fastest transition play you've ever seen, but they go up the floor, find Aaron Gordon in transition, and he hit the layup. and one, and he hit the free throw, and suddenly Denver's back up 9. And then I think the next one down, even Shaq was all over Dame again. Dame tried to do the whole, like, maybe I can draw the foul shot on the three-point attempt there, sort of chuck my body in there. The refs didn't fall for it, so he just chucked it up, and then the Nuggets went the other way. It went back and forth a little bit, but it ended with Jokic hitting a three at the end to put him up 12. Like, again, Lillard was that was that stretch where he hit, like, 4 threes, like, in a blink of an eye, and it was a 4-point game, Trey, and then I thought the Nuggets just did an unbelievable job. Like, smart timeout, of course, go to Jokic, and then they just ended the half on a great note and sort of then rode that in the second with Aaron Gordon being the switch up there on Dame. I thought that was huge.
Yeah, absolutely. Lillard scored 22, right, in the second quarter, and the Nuggets still won the quarter because they scored 42 to the Blazers, 36. And that's why, to me, this is going to be a very long series. We're probably going 7 games at this point because I don't think you can really rely on either of these teams' defenses. Certainly not the Blazers. I don't know. I've started rethinking this whole try to make Jokic a scorer thing. Obviously, he had more assists last night. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't you want everybody else on the Nuggets to be taking the shots rather than Jokic, considering he's out there dominating every single time he touches the ball? He was just as special as Lillard in the first half. Obviously, it was 25 to 32 or whatever, but he's a guaranteed bucket. You're saying, okay, you go ahead and score. I know he wants to be a passer, but personally, I would rather have Facundo Campazzo taking jumpers, Marcus Howard taking jumpers, basically anybody but the MVP. But I don't think the Blazers are good enough defensively to really stick to that game plan. They got huge contributions from Carmelo Anthony and Anfernee Simons in game one. They scored 8 points combined in game two, and that's why this is just going to continue to be a series that goes back and forth, because both of these teams have a really great star and then some good players as well. So yeah, great contributions from Millsap yesterday. Aaron Gordon was huge. And that's what you need to get a win in game two here.
The Blazers, 21 turnovers, outscored 54 to 32 in the paint, 16 to 4 in fast breaks, and 21 to 4 in second chance points. Yeah, it was not a great, all around game from the Blazers outside of Lillard, I would say. And the defense was, it was looking like that 29th ranked defense there, if we're being honest, Tass, for the regular season. I know they had picked it up as of late at the end of the year with Nurk's coming back there and playing, but it just got carved up. There was a lot of easy buckets here from the Nuggets, who shot the ball exceptionally well, too.
Yeah, the key minutes to me are when Jokic goes to the bench and Michael Porter Jr. is leading basically the second unit out there. If the Blazers can stop him and stop that second unit, which, went from being a negative in the double digits in game one, got outscored by double digits in game one, to being the outscores by 17 in the second game, outscored the Nuggets bench. Those are the key minutes, because Michael Porter Jr., they run the whole offense through him. But yeah, all those other guys that he got going, which was really impressive to me, that the Nuggets bench, the oldies and Millsap and Monte Morris, and you don't even have a PJ Dozier to sick on Lillard. You got to go deep with Shaq Harrison. The bench was really important there. One thing I want to say about Michael Porter Jr. that I love about him is that he gets guys up in the air, and he doesn't do the conventional, like, go horizontal and try and get a foul call thing that every NBA player is doing, and hopefully they look at one off season. We ask for it every year, but it's not happening. But he hasn't been sullied by that move yet. You know, he's still doing it like, I just want to get my shots off. I don't want to go to the free throw line. You know, he's like, I want to shoot. So he wants that those real points. So hopefully that never happens, because he gets everybody up in the air, but he's able to navigate through. So yeah, I agree. Like, it's gonna be a long series, but the big boys are canceling each other out right now. Lillard right. and Jokic, 42 and 38, and then it's the supporting cast. And you'd think with all the Nuggets injuries that they wouldn't be able to match the Blazers. So that's what I'm feeling for the rest of the series. Like, the guys who came through in this one, like Paul Millsap and Monte Morris, they're gonna have to come through again.
Lee, what do you think about Trey saying, like, almost reconsidering the game plan to make Jokic, like, the full-on scorer there? And maybe that could backfire, I guess. Do you like it? You hate it? Continue to do what they're doing with him. He's going to get his anyway. At least you're not getting killed on backdoor cuts, that he's throwing sweet dimes to and stuff like that. Like, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, you pick your poison with him, because he's so capable of doing both, and I think he prefers to be the facilitator. I think he prefers to be the guy who gets, 20, 25 points rather than have to go for 35 or 40, because you know, he likes it when guys are cutting and he can hit those threes, and that just opens up their offense a whole lot. So if you're the Blazers, do you just load up on him and say, all right, well, let's not let him go off because he's so easy, he's so capable of doing that. And, you know, Nurkic is a good matchup for him physically, but in terms of skill set, you know, Jokic really can just have his way because he can do that against most other defenders where he just sort of slips and slides into the lane there. You don't quite know what he's doing. And then if you get in his face, he still just has the driveway dad Dirk fall away. So he's got so much versatility to his game. It's really hard to sort of take something away from him because he's more than willing as a facilitator as much as he is a scorer. But I think in game two, when your team needs that win, I really like that your best player and your likely MVP goes out from the start and really puts his dominance on the game offensively by scoring the ball, sort of taking that leadership role, because then it does change things in the second half of the Blazers. You're like, okay, now what do we do? Because these other guys, like you say, with Michael Porter Jr., I think he only hit three threes in this game, but that's an improvement of the one in game one. It's like, okay, if these guys do start hitting shots, then their offense looks so much better. So it's a tough one. I mean, you know, anytime a star dominates like that, scoring or shooting the ball, you know, it usually leads his team to victory. It didn't for Lillard, of course, last night, but it did for Jokic. So it's tough. I mean, if you've got someone who can really slow him down and stop him from scoring and shooting, then put him on him. But the Blazers just don't have that guy, really. It's you're just hoping Nurkic can you know, compete with him well. And he didn't really do a good job of that last night, I didn't think.
Yeah, 15 for 20 for Jokic. And Nurkic fouled out with, like, 10 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter. He fouled out pretty early. If I'm the Blazers, I'm not confident he can stick Jokic every single night. Maybe once every other game he limits him to 14 for 27 like in game one, but Jokic was still scoring. At this point, like, I would rather lose to a 6 3-pointer game from Facundo Campazzo than seeing another 35 from Jokic.
You'd rather lose to a Bryn Forbes than a Giannis.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, great game from Jokic, from a lot of these Nuggets players, like Tass said. Everybody's stepping up. Look, you want to call it, was it a must win? Yeah, probably.
I think so.
Both games at home. Yeah. Against a team that we all expect to be a long series, that would be very difficult to come back and out of a 2-0 hole when you had home court. So that was huge. Great victory. It should be a long series. Tied at one game apiece. We'll get to game three later in the week. But
let me just jump in here. Sure. Isn't it shocking that Damian Lillard, he had 8 threes at half, tying the playoff record for most threes in a playoff half by Vince Carter?
I know.
Vince
Carter still has that
record?
Yeah. That's
considering
strange.
All the guys, Kawhi Jordan bringing it up here in the stream team. That's nuts. And Vince, if I'm not mistaken, hit 8 straight threes.
He did.
Right?
This is against the Sixers, right? The
game
series.
Game three against the Sixers. He had 50 in that game.
Yeah.
Oh, and wow. Then, way back.
And then later on, graduated. Oh, yeah. Goodness. Amazing.
What a series.
It is weird that it's Vince. I mean,
it is.
What did Clay have that game against OKC when he had 11 in the game? He must have only, I guess he had. Yeah, 6,
he must
I
have
guess.
Split it up nicely, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
All right. Vince and Dame now with the record. 3-pointers made in a playoff game with 8. Somebody find me the play
half.
Somebody find me the play in record, though. That's what I want to know. What is
can't
it?
Find it.
4? 3 right
maybe
now?
If you have it in your brain, you might be able to reference it, but there's no way to find it anywhere on the internet.
So exactly. I got yelled at by John Schumann of NBA.com
awesome.
For saying that it doesn't exist anywhere, and he said, yes, it does. There is a play-in tab on NBA.com, specific play-in tab. Yeah, but if it's not universal, I know NBA is the holy grail of stats, but it's nowhere else. It's not on Basketball Reference. It doesn't exist to me until it's somewhere else, right?
It doesn't exist until it's on Basketball Reference somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah, you gotta verify it.
They must be doing the play-in tab 2 or section 2 like NBA.com, you'd imagine.
Danielle has taken up painting. Oil painting, acrylic painting, other painting. I don't know what it is, but it's just incredible. If I can convince her to open up a Shopify store, I know she'll be hearing the Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, just do it, to the first real life store stage, see, you made a sale, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? How about that? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap, offering outdoor outfits, or paintings, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From the all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Here's some information. Just like entrepreneur David Scott Martin of Antique Candle did for No Dunks on Shopify. How about that? And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/nodunks.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Okay, well, let's go to the other blowout. It was the first one of the night. It was over in a hurry. Bucks capitalize on that hot start. They roll past the Heat, 132-98. They are up 2-0 in this rematch series versus Miami. Yeah, Trey, what's the takeaway? You want to talk about Bryn Forbes, baby? Because he was on fire.
In the words of Lee Ellis, this was a game. This was a game. In the words of Tass Mellis, this was the Bryn Forbes game.
Yeah.
That's bad writer. Over early. The Bucks made 10 threes and scored 46 points in the first quarter. And it was all because of Tass's subterranean signing of the year. Bryn Forbes scored 14 in the first quarter, made 4 threes, and honestly, the game was over after one quarter. The Bucks ended up making 22 three-pointers after just 5 in game 1. They never trailed. They led by 36. It was an easy win for the Bucks. This was by far the worst game of the playoffs so far. But if you're Milwaukee, sitting pretty right now, up 2-0, heading to Miami, you want a nail-biter. You want a blowout. And the biggest thing is that Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo cannot figure out the size of the Milwaukee Bucks right now. Jimmy took less jumpers last night, took a lot of shots in the lane, still only ended up with 10 points, hasn't figured out how to attack Giannis yet, and Bam, to me, looks totally lost. Yeah. They were running plays to get him post-ups earlier in the game. Looked like maybe he was waiting for a double team, looking for some sort of cut or whatever it was. He just ended up kind of holding the ball there in the post, waiting and dribbling away from the hoop before shooting a weird floater, and then he did it a couple of more times. I don't know. Basically, the only Heat player who played well last night was Dwayne Dedmon. Are we at the Dwayne Dedmon portion of this series already, where the adjustment is starting Dwayne Dedmon just because you need a little bit more size out there? Somebody to go at Lopez to battle him on the glass. It allows Bam to go up a position and stick Giannis, and then maybe it's a little easier for Jimmy. I don't know, but it's not looking good for the Heat right now.
Yeah, Tass, what'd you think of your guy there? Forbes coming through. I mean, look, at some point, too, the guy's hit 3. Maybe play him on the 4th one or the 5th one or the 6th one. Like, he was... I know it's Bryn Forbes. He's going to be left open. But when the guy's on fire, these are NBA players. Like, he... there was one, maybe, where he had some actual defense on him. A lot of these were of the wide-open variety.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm a big Bryn Forbes fan. I'm a big fan of what the Bucks did in the offseason. It's sort of been unheralded where everybody's talking about the Utah Jazz and how they shoot three-point shots. The Bucks changed their team as well. You know, it's not just Jrue Holiday. They got three-point shooters around Giannis. That's why they have the all-time NBA record for threes in a game with 29. It was done earlier this season. I thought there was a chance after they hit 10 in the first frickin' quarter that they would surpass that. But yeah, if Bryn Forbes is getting open shots, that means you're just not playing defense. The Heat, it's just weird to see the Miami Heat just not show up. The Bucks grabbed half of their misses in the first half. One of every two shots they threw up and missed, they grabbed That means the Heat just didn't show up, right? I mean, that's the Heat not playing any basketball. That was weird. So to me, you know, other than the physical play in this game, there was nothing to do but make stupid tweets. So that's why I went to Twitter talking about Brent Forbes. I made a real, real cute tweet about Brent saying, when the shot leaves Forbes' hands, it looks wet. And then it's Bryn there like swimwear.
That's
and then
not bad for
that's
you.
Not bad.
Not for you. But
Bryn there like swimwear. Yeah, I tossed a like on this. I had to. Bryn there like swimwear.
Of course, we're reaching here. It's a blowout. Let's so have good. Some fun. Oh, I mean, it was dead on Twitter. Then Brent Berry, San Antonio Spurs executive, and the team that Brent Forbes came from last season responded to me, said just no. But he wanted to get in on it too. He said, but on back-to-back threes, you could go Bryn there, done that. And then I didn't
it's not
have
bad
a good.
Too.
No,
yeah.
No, it's good. It's good. Yeah. Yeah, and then everybody else.
He likes it. He likes it.
He loves it.
He loves it, man.
He
this guy wrote a whole song called PJ Tucker Open in the Corner. He's going to be upset at you for saying Bryn there like swimwear. Come on, Bryn.
Yeah, I had a response. It was a real George Costanza moment for me. Like, I came up with it like half an hour later, and it was just too late. I could have said, why are you all Brent out of shape, Barry? Because you gave up Forbes? You know, something like that. Because you gave him up last season? Because he was on your team last season? Why are you Brent out of shape? Yeah, whatever. Yeah, anyway. yeah. He was a San Antonio Spur last year. Now he's rocking shots for the Bucks. But good for Bryn. Mm. But, yeah, a little bit worrisome going for the rest of the series. If you're going to play like the Heat didn't play basketball, right?
Yep.
I mean, oh, yeah.
That was
I mean.
Terrible.
Trevor Ariza may not be allowed to play anymore for the Heat here. Like, what's he bringing? I just want to know, like, I get the idea, hey, maybe he's a Jay Crowder replacement. Well, he's not, because he's given you nothing offensively, which Crowder, of course, couldn't miss threes when they last played when he was there. And then has no chance of slowing Giannis down. I mean, Giannis ended with, like, a very quiet, I would say, in this game, 31-13 and 6, mm-hmm. You know. It just has this, every time I look, you know, you watch this game, like, it feels like Giannis is just doing whatever he wants to Ariza, to the point where Ariza is obviously getting frustrated and wrapping him up and then doing a push-up on him. and Giannis didn't seem to care. He's showing off his soccer skills later in the game. But, like, I don't know if it is Deadman. That's maybe a little worrisome, Trey, but it's got to be something, I think. I just don't get what Ariza is bringing to the team here at this point, Lili.
Yeah, no, and Giannis has to absolutely demolish him when he's on them. And I thought even in that second quarter, the Bucks, you know, well, Bryn Forbes was on fire. And by the way, I had one in the can. I should have fired it. Forbes is going for 30 for in under 30. Didn't let it go. I should have. Maybe that was it, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I was going to say,
of course you should have fired.
I was going to say when he hit his fifth three, I was going to say, somebody check the Forbes 5 and then put the 0-0 in brackets list or something like that.
Yeah. This was
a brutal game, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. That was
workshopping tweets the
exactly.
day after.
I just wanted to get it right. And I was like, I sort of need him to get to 30, but then you can fire it. But anyway, the Bucks ran a couple of really simple things as well in that second quarter when they still had a 20-23 point lead and Giannis got an alley-oop at the lane. He got dunks in there like that. That's what they need to do as well, just to sort of keep on flexing their muscles because, yeah, Ariza doesn't belong on the court trying to stop Giannis. He's way too slow and he's nowhere near big enough. You know, he might have the old man strength, but that shouldn't count and it doesn't really. And yeah, and you mentioned there when you did that push-up on Giannis after taking him down, I thought Giannis' response was great, not to get sucked into that.
He was smiling. Yeah. He was like confused.
Because that's the sort of thing. I mean, we've seen Giannis, younger Giannis, get a little bit angry and get sort of, you know, in the playoffs and can cost his team at times. And, mm-hmm. and last night, he basically just looked at Trevor Ariza and said, if you're out here and you're on me, I'm just going to demolish you. And he did. So, you know, certainly some concerns there for the Heat because I expect them to bounce back. But yeah, Jimmy and Bam, if those guys aren't playing well, they've got no chance in this series. You know, you can't rely on Kendrick Nunn hitting threes. And you know, Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero, they're going to hit threes fine, but they still need Jimmy to set the table.
Well, Tyler Hero is definitely not.
But they will. They will. They'll, you know, you don't expect the Heat to, you know, obviously go away without a whimper here. But yeah, the big concern is that Jimmy hasn't really been able to get himself going and they need Bam as well. So
Made a mistake. He went stupidly locked in before game one. It locked him in too much. He tried to recalibrate for last night. Didn't lock in enough. Mm. He should have just stuck with the standard locking in, which obviously worked last year.
Yeah, stick with the coffee. Don't
I guess so. He's moved to espresso now. He's a little too tuned up. Went with decaf last night. Not good.
Yeah.
Just get a standard drip, bud.
But yeah, really impressive performance, I thought, from the Bucks. And, you know, will they be able to keep it up with that hot shooting? I mean, you think that's going to cool down somewhat down there in Miami. But overall, you know, Giannis, you mentioned their skids, 31-13, but wasn't like Giannis sort of really dragged them to this victory. It was more just like...
Well, no, because everybody was hitting... he had a three-pointer to start the game, did he
not? Yeah, and then he went 0 for 6 after that, yeah, I think. So, you know, I would like him to sort of reel that in a little bit, but, you know, fine. Do whatever you want out there, Giannis, when you're up 2-0 in the series. But good bounce back by the Bucks, considering, you know, they weren't very good in game one. And they didn't let that sort of, the fact they got that win, slip up in game two and go back to Miami. They need to dominate this series. And so far, well, they haven't dominated the series, but they certainly dominated game two.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on Jimmy's got to be better. That's an obvious. But just back to Bam, Trey, because there was a couple plays too where he got it and he's like, he wasn't even looking at the rim. And, like, the Bucks are sagging off him. Like, anywhere between, like, you know, outside the restricted area, they're like, go ahead, man. Like, what do you... Like, he can't hit a shot right now. He's usually money with that shot, too. Like, he's really good from that area of the floor. But I saw Shu tweeted out. Shout out to Shu again. Jimmy and Bam are combined 7 for 32 on shots between the restricted area and the three-point line. So the mid-game there, they can't hit one. And then the Bucks are just sagging off them. And there was a couple where you're like, you could see the gears turning in Bam's head because the confidence is shot a little bit on his release right now. So he's like not even taking it. So, you know, Giannis at least is still letting it fly there, Lili. You almost want that from your superstars. This is Bam Adebayo. This is a guy that a lot of people had on their All-NBA teams.
What number did he make of yours?
He was top five at All-NBA teams, I think, for you.
I believe he was number... I think I had him on my fourth team. Yeah, that makes sense. Because I made sure that Jokic was one and Bede was two. I wasn't getting silly with him as a forward. And then three was Gobert. And then, yeah, Bam was four. But he's playing... I mean, I'd rather have JV on my All-NBA fourth team right now for being honest. No, Bam's got to play better. These guys, they got their ass kicked. So it's like in a 35, you know, point blowout, whatever the hell it was, like... That's on one side, the one team is playing incredibly well, and then on the other side, it's like the other team is garbage. To get to those type of scores, so we'll see if the Heat can bounce back. I don't know what the change is, Tass. Is there anything that jumped out to you, just outside of obviously just playing a lot harder and having your superstars come through a little bit better?
Well, I thought a big change to start the game was not letting Duncan Robinson go off, because that's what happened in game one. The Heat superstars were still poop, but Duncan Robinson was holding them in the game. He had 7 threes, and I think the Bucks did a good job of giving him some extra hugs around the perimeter, just not letting him go. Chris Middleton was just literally not letting him out of his grasp, and the refs weren't calling that. So I wonder if the refs call that a little bit in game three, but Duncan couldn't get shots off. He only hit 2 threes. And yeah, the rest of the Heat, like Bam, he's just caught in no man's land. Like, he got the ball in mid-range, and it's like, you know, he is a center. He's like an Andre Drummond. Like, he looks like a guy who's just not taking that shot. He's looking for the dribble handoff, and then he kind of looks at the rim and says, oh, yeah, I can shoot. And then he kind of just throws his body into Brook Lopez and flicks it up. Like, he's not using his form. That's a strange one. There's a lot of things. If you lose by 30-plus, you got to play some frickin' defense. You got to rebound. But, you know, good signs for the Bucks. They jumped up from the assist numbers from 19 to 34. But a part of that was the Heat just not playing defense.
Yeah, and also with those assist numbers, it just a lot of them are so many times like Drew Holiday just giving it back to Bryn Forbes and he hits a three because nobody can miss a three. Like, I'm always like, you know, you gotta. I know, Lee, you watch every assist, or you used to, for very solid play, but there's so many of that variation where it's just like, well, if a bunch of guys are just hitting three pointers, then yeah, your assist numbers are gonna look awesome. Like, Drew Holiday had 15 assists.
Yeah.
That's great. I love him. He is an unbelievable upgrade over Eric Bledsoe, duh, on both ends. But, like, you know, how many assists from last night's game from Drew Holiday were you like, ooh, what a dime? You know, no, a lot of it was just like, okay, kick it over to there. We're going to hit another three. That's great. But, you know, that's
smart,
you
know, smart. Pad your numbers in a game like that, because you are basically just letting go of the ball and the other guy's just firing it in and giving you a stat for it. So it's great. But that's also the thing, going back like to Jokic in that other game, he only had one assist. I mean, his passes weren't bad in the first game against the Blazers. Just when guys aren't hitting shots, all of a sudden it's like, oh, he only had one assist. They kept him quiet. But Yeah, no, I just wonder if the Heat perhaps throw Dragic into the starting lineup rather than Kendrick Nunn for Game 3. I mean, they should get Ariza out, but who are they going to put in for him? I mean, Iguodala.
They need some help on the glass. They've got out-rebounded in both of these games. It's tough when you get outshot from the three-point line, give up 22 threes, and then also give up 21 offensive rebounds. That's not the kind of 2020 we like here on No Dunks.
No, I mean, that's really their only option. I don't think they're going to go with Precious. He's not ready.
And then when Bielitsa gets under Giannis' skin.
Yeah, but that's the thing. If you're Giannis, you're licking your lips if Bielitsa's out there. I think Dedmon is the only guy who, physically can at least sort of... push and shove a little bit better than anybody else can for the Heat.
How he scared the crap out of you when we were at the Hawks game?
I think about every time I see Dwayne Dedmon, scaring the shit out of Leo.
Him and Ivan Johnson, man, I am terrified of those dudes. Absolutely terrified.
They're intimidating. They're very scowl to them. 24/7 scowl. Game two, though, did get like the Blazers-Nuggets game. Got increasingly physical there in the second half because we had the Ariza play. We had Kendrick Nunn also getting a flagrant one foul in the third quarter. We had Dragic getting a dead ball technical foul, I guess it was, when he did like a little figure four leg lock on Middleton after they got mixed up. And then in the fourth quarter, I think it was that Bobby Portis technical after he sort of like pushed Bielitsa off Giannis. I actually liked that. I had in my notes... when the Heat were doing all this extracurricular stuff there in the third quarter, I'm like, come on, somebody on the Bucks gonna like say fuck off already? These guys they're pissed, they're down, they're getting a little chippy, but I'd like to see somebody on the Milwaukee Bucks like give it back a little bit. So I thought it would be Bobby, crazy Bobby Portis, OG Bobby Portis in his eyes. I liked him stepping up for Giannis at least when Bielitsa was over him. Because nothing happened with the Ariza one. That's fine. Maybe they didn't see it or whatever. I know it's a strange spot where it is on the floor. But I was a fan of that. If I'm a Bucks fan, I'd be like, yeah, come on. That's Giannis. That's our guy.
Is that the tough guy? Is that the Bucks tough guy? Bobby Portis? PJ Tucker is probably your candidate. And those are both new guys to the team. So, yeah, maybe they're bringing a little extra spunk to the proceedings.
You know what I mean, Trey, right? Like the Heat were again. They're frustrated, so they're going to start, getting a little handsy, and they're pissed off, so they're a little pushy and stuff like that. But you gotta stick up for your guy at the very least, your superstar, and so because he can't be the one doing it. Even though we've seen him like try and take off, who was it, Dunleavy's head or whatever?
Big old body check before.
I guess it used to be
DJ Wilson with the Bucks, but they lost their David Guetta in that trade, so they don't have their DJ anymore. I just want to say David Guetta.
Yeah, fair enough. Hey, while we're not talking about the game because it was so boring, did you guys see the Miami Heat jerseys that I guess were leaked? I'm going to pop them up here, JD. Here they are. This is what we're apparently going to be seeing next year. What do you think, Lee?
The Heat, I don't know why they go away from what works. I don't think this is working. I don't like these color clashes. Okay. Now, I can see that clearly it's like a mashup of all their old, some of their old jerseys and numbers But I don't think the numbers, the colors there work all that well. The Heat said they're retiring their Miami Vice jerseys after this season. I mean, they've had so many bangers. This one, to me, kind of looks like they ran out of ideas. Or they just got drunk on power and love of, like, anything we put out is awesome. No.
Next year, like, the NBA with these, what are these? I don't know. Are they City Edition or something like that? The theme is going to be, like, sort of like a mashup of a team's like logos and jerseys to some extent. I mean, the Heat, if this is true, Trey, like really running with it. Like this is wild.
I'm with Lee here. I think they got a little drunk with power and love, because some of these other mashups look like there was a little bit more thought put into them to kind of make a coherent jersey, right? Like the Bulls one has the old school script font across the chest. And like the drop shadow number lower, like they used to have back in the 60s or whatever. And it just looks like a jersey that should exist. And this one looks like a ransom note, much like the Cleveland Cavaliers Rock and Roll Hall of Fame jersey looks like a ransom note. Yeah, Miami, this season's city jersey, the two-tone, and this one here, not my favorites, but some of the other mashup ones look all right.
Yeah, and these are leaks, by the way. These are not confirmed, so these could, you know, maybe these teams are starting to get slick with this stuff and like start like, you know, mocking up these jerseys and get them out there in the world, and then they'll surprise us. But look at Tass here catching a stray in the stream team. Those are worse than Tass's Bobcats jersey.
All right.
Easy Bucks block. Wow.
Can't wait to see what they do with the Hornets jersey. Are they going to get some of that, like a checkerboard pattern to reference their Bobcats past?
Ooh, checkerboard, like, style, like, into a gradient of the honeycomb.
Ooh.
Checkered to the honeycomb.
See, I think,
the checks,
like,
to the combs.
I think these Miami ones are fake, but
okay.
I think they would sell just because it's mostly black.
Oh, I think so too, actually.
And, you know, it's, I could see a billion of those on South Beach. Like, the fellas will be wearing those. Right?
The fellas will be wearing those. Of power and love will be wearing those on the Miami Beach.
It's nice that it's different. To me, it's nice that it's different. It's not like, you know, the whole jersey is the bluey flowing into the pinky, It's just a black jersey with, you know, some crazy cutout Photoshop clip art stuff going on there. But, yeah, they're probably fake.
Per UniWatch, according to Bryant Singleton, it's for the 75th anniversary. So that makes sense that all these teams are pulling from their past. I think it's going to be a real one, Tassie.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, they're going to sell.
We'll see you on South Beach. Yeah, you're right, Trey. I've seen a couple other floating around. Maybe we'll do something later in this week if we get some more blowouts and go through some of the leaked 75th anniversary jerseys that are making their way to the internet. You guys, Lee, you know you've seen me, though, in the gray sweatshirt, jeans, and wet kicks. 100%.
You strut around
style.
Vegas. Yeah, that is you. Yeah. You're a quick walker, looking good, feeling good, chewing on your popsicle stick.
Yeah. Man. God, I want an Astro Pop so bad right now. Do you guys get the truck going around your neighborhood? Is that thing still...
What?
The ice cream truck?
Yeah, but I remember the last couple of years, it's just like a rental van these days. They've really bottomed out. It's like the guy's just got the like magnets on the side.
Astro Man selling Astro Pops?
No, it's like a U-Haul, and he's just got the magnets on the side of the truck. That's just like, get your ice creams here. It's like there's no pizzazz anymore.
There's no actual truck.
Well, in our area anyway, there's been a couple of those guys. So yeah, it's not the same. I'm not sending my kids. I'm not going out to buy one from a guy who's just like rented the van. I want the window. I want the guy wearing the hat. You know, I want it to feel the. Authentic experience.
Does he have the music going at least? Like playing from his iPhone? Just holding his iPhone out the window?
I think he's just got his Spotify playlist going, so it's not the same either. You want that ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. All right. Is that you? Would you buy street ribs from a van though?
Well, probably. That's a different story.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, okay. All right. Let's get to Is This News? Got some good headlines here for you. Tell me whether or not they're newsworthy. First one from NBA.com. Utah Jazz guard Jordan Clarkson wins 2020-21 Kia NBA Sixth Man Award. Tass, is this news? Clarkson ultimately getting it with 65 first place votes.
Well, it's not news because we kind of expected it, but news that they continue to find innovative ways to announce it, right? Ernie Johnson.
Yeah.
On TNT, basically, brought in Joe Ingles and Jordan Clarkson over satellite to talk about the series. I felt like they were talking about the series. So the two of them sit down. Ernie Johnson's asking him a bunch of questions. Then he starts this quiz sort of part of the interview, and he asks him three questions. And the third question is, how many members of the Utah Jazz have won Sixth Man of the Year? Jordan Clarkson immediately says zero, which is the correct answer, and Joe Ingles says one. And then the reveal. You're the first one, Jordan Clarkson. This has been a great part of the Zoom era here of the NBA. They're finding innovative ways to announce these winners. So that was pretty cool. I thought they did a really good job.
Yeah. You had Clarkson getting the 65 first place votes there, 407 total points. And then Joe Ingles. That was the crazy part, giving him the assist there with the award. But he was second, Lely, with 34 first place votes. So they got 99 out of 100 first place votes, a Utah Jazz player did. And Derrick Rose getting the lone other one there, finishing third overall. What'd you think of the reveal there? I thought it was pretty well done. It actually, It got me, I'll tell you that. And I was like, I was sort of confused. Like, why are we talking to these guys? I guess the Jazz are in the news for other reasons with Donovan Mitchell. And we got Ingles wearing a Clarkson t-shirt. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I guess we'll just hang out with these guys. And then, yeah, then they surprised them with the award there. Clarkson seemed, you know, legitimately shocked by it, so which was pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know why he was shocked, though. I think this was his award to win very early on in the season. He was the second leading scorer on the best team in the NBA. And this award always goes to just the guy who gets the most points off the bench. I mean, it's the Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford Award. If you can score, and he plays just like those guys did when they win it. You just come out there, start firing away. He cooled off towards the end of the season, but I'm not really surprised that he ultimately picked up this award because he was pretty good this season for the most part. I mean, those, like I say, the percentages dipped a little in the second half, but prior to that, he was firing away and, you know, that's a good role for him, a good position for him to play and be successful.
Hit 203 three-pointers off the bench, Trey. Fourth highest single-season total off the bench in NBA history from Clarkson.
Yeah, incredible stuff. He said he basically learned, like you're saying, Lee, from talking with Jamal Crawford. He was teammates with Lou Williams, and he was teammates with J.R. Smith. Not many better sixth men to learn from. Like, yeah, hey, man, when you're the sixth man, just go out and shoot it every time. You don't have to talk Jordan Clarkson into that. Had a great season as a sixth man. Joe Ingles, great season as a seventh man. And yeah, I can't believe how much I liked that reveal. That was quite the hug from Clarkson and Ingles, you know? We're all getting back to hugging these days. It's usually just a couple little on the back, a quick tap, tap, and then you're on to the next one. That was a serious embrace from those two guys, and he looked legitimately shocked, despite the fact that they were on TNT. And like you're saying, Joe Ingles was wearing a Jordan Clarkson shirt. There should have been a little bit of a giveaway, but I was loving it. And I was loving it when Jordan Clarkson was like, hey, man, thanks for passing me the ball all the time.
Yeah.
That was great.
Ingles was like doing a little production work too on that Zoom call task. Did you see, like, because they stood up to like sort of celebrate the handing over the award and hugging, like Trey said. And then like, so they were cut off because there's no, you know, camera operator there. It's just a Zoom setup. It's just a camera plopped up there. But Joe at one point is like, hey, let's sit back down. Let's get in frame here. I was like, wow, this guy does it all, man.
Mad respect. Mad respect for that. Yeah. Obviously, camera locked off.
Yeah.
Nobody able to tilt that thing up. But yeah, they wanted a full hug. They didn't want an awkward sitting down hug. So they get up, have a full embrace, and then had to sit down. Yeah, great. Great job by Joe Ingles. And yeah, the trophy was sort of nearby as well. Like, it wasn't in Jordan Clarkson's view, I guess, or else that was a serious giveaway. But yeah, the way Jordan Clarkson gave that hug, he didn't know. He had no idea. He was totally surprised. So well done. Now, it's going to be hard to continue to surprise guys with this stuff, but so far, so great. It's gonna have to elevate, right? Every year, they're gonna have to get better and better.
It's gonna be harder to fool them.
All right, next one here. Let's stick with the Jazz. This is a different type of story. ESPN will go with the headline. Donovan Mitchell upset at Utah Jazz for late call to sit him for game one, but says focus is now on game two. Lee, weird story with this one. You know, we touched on it. There was so much going on with the eight games on the weekend. You know, we threw it in there that he was like going to play, said he was going to play, and then he was a late scratch and didn't play and they lost. They say he's good to go for game two. Hopefully that doesn't change, or they might have to fight each other, I think, or something like that. But what do you make of this weird story that Brian Windhorst and Tim Bontemps, you know, really illustrating that Mitchell was quite pissed off with the Jazz team training staff, I guess.
Yeah, awful timing for this, for sure, for the Jazz, because it looks like their star player is kind of at war almost with his front office and coaching staff there, because he was expecting to play in game one. He thought he was going to play, and the Jazz ultimately overruled him and said, no, you're not playing because you're not ready. Now, in that article you mentioned, I think it's actually Tim McMahon, not Tim Bontemps,
who was there with the Windy. Oh, excuse me, got my Timmy's mixed up.
Yeah, you got your Macca and your Good Times got mixed up there. and Windy as well, leading the way. You know, Donovan Mitchell was out for a lot longer than I expected with this initial ankle injury from April 16. And he started working with his own guys there. And that, I think, you know, we only have to look at the Kawhi Leonard situation. I think that's what's caused the friction between him and the front office, is who really ultimately decides whether or not he should play. I think it comes down to the team. I think the team should have the final say here. So the Jazz, after losing the game as well, this just becomes a bigger story, because it's like, they can't afford now to drop game two and fall behind 2-0 in this series, or else they'll be under enormous pressure. So they need to go out there and have a win and have people talking about their game and the way they're playing again rather than anything else, because this threatens to derail what has been an incredible season for Utah. And if they were to lose somehow in this first round, I mean, that would just be a disaster for them. So I think they'll be fine. I think they can get out of it, and I think they can smooth things over. And that article as well, they sort of alluded to the fact that Dwayne Wade is now a part of the ownership group there, a minority owner. So he could sort of come in, and his voice, I think, carries a lot of weight. And I think he would be able to smooth things over there and get people on the right page, because if there's any sort of inner turmoil that translates or carries over to the game, and it's, and you can see it out on the court, that's just a recipe for disaster. So, you know, I think the Jazz get on top of this quickly and hopefully win game two for them, and they can get back to playing basketball, because it's an awful look for them right now.
Yeah, Trey, what do you make of this weird situation here in Utah?
I don't even know why this story came out. I have a feeling if the Jazz win game one, we maybe just hear that it was a late call for Donovan Mitchell, and they're like, wow, that was really surprising, but we're thankful to be able to pull out a win playing without him. So why did this story even come out? Because we've already heard that he's going to be available for game two, that they've smoothed everything over. So was this just basically, hey, Donovan Mitchell wanted to play in game one, but he wasn't able to? Is that the only reason we're hearing this? So we knew that he wanted to be out there? I don't get it. It seems completely unnecessary for there to be drama after game one of your first round playoff series. You just had maybe your best regular season in franchise history, and now you're beefing after game one. Not a great look for the Jazz.
I think it's only out here, Tass, because Donovan Mitchell made it public. I mean, he was, mm-hmm. of course, on record saying, like, I was playing. I told you I was playing. I was good to go. And then they're, like, preventing me from doing that. They're trying to protect me from myself. But I'm myself, and I know I can play, and I can help win. I agree with everything you said. If they win this game, then this is not a headline here on the show, I'm sure. But they didn't. I think they got a little cute with it, if I'm being completely honest. The Jazz did. I think if they're playing the Warriors or the Lakers in a first-round series, I'm guessing he plays in game one, knowing the importance of it and how tough that series might be. But they thought, well, it's the Grizz. You know, maybe we can steal this one without our superstar, and then bring him back in games two or three. Hell, maybe they win game one and he doesn't even come back for game two, for all we know. I know there's a big break here, but anyway, that's my opinion on it. That's just what my gut says. But what do you think, Tess?
Well, I really hope that it doesn't turn into a Kawhi Leonard situation with the Spurs, and I don't think it will, just because even Donovan Mitchell's body language was far more into the game than Kawhi Leonard ever was after the injuries. I mean, Kawhi Leonard basically disappeared. Donovan Mitchell was there on the sideline cheering on Rudy Gobert. He was there trying to help out guys. So I just think it's something that a win or two or three or four will just squash real quick. Yeah. I think that's what it comes down to. But yeah, the story's probably just happened because it's a loss. And click, 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 click.
Well, he tweeted, though, as well.
Yeah, he did this story. Yeah, I want to make that very clear. He came out and sort of, you know, basically lambasted his Jazz training staff.
Wanted to say more and stuff, which is, that's awful. That's just an awful look for the organization if your star player is tweeting that. So don't tweet. That's the rule here.
Oh, yeah, there it is. All right. Well, we got a final headline here. This one's interesting. We'll go to The Athletic for this one. The NBA says LeBron James' attendance at an outdoor event didn't create COVID-19 risk. The league released a statement to clarify any remaining misconception about why LeBron was not required to quarantine in accordance with the league's health and safety protocols, because he was at this Tequila Brand event last week before the Lakers played the Warriors. So the league coming out with a statement about LeBron, and here's why he obviously didn't have to miss a game or get fined or anything like that. What do you make of this? Is this news?
Well, the NBA had to come out with a statement because everybody was criticizing them, saying, you guys don't have the guts to suspend LeBron James after he violated COVID protocol. There's been a ton of guys who violated COVID protocol, and there's been a ton of instances, us included, where we're all sort of tiptoeing around the LeBron James stories, right? We don't want to piss off the king. We all don't want, you know, the league that's based on stardom to have their best guy be suspended or to be badmouthed in any way. We're all guilty of that. And this league that's based on stars more than any other league, I know what's happened in the past. I know Barkley came out and said the league just doesn't have the guts to suspend LeBron James. So there is that history going up against this, but I think if you look at this situation in a vacuum, this isn't exactly the same as the previous 8 months. Things have changed with COVID-19 protocols. At least they should have. I mean, they have on in a governmental level and the CDC level. Like, we know that if you're outside, like this tequila event was, the transmission of COVID-19 just isn't as prevalent. They've learned that. And as well, the other fact is everyone was vaccinated at this event. He was there for a short time. I think just because of everything that's changed, I think it's totally fine. But the NBA had to come out and address it, because we've seen so many instances like Kevin Durant sitting on the bench in a Brooklyn Nets uniform, had to go to the back, and then, you know, he tweets, "Free me," you know. So it's like the NBA has to address it. Unfortunately, I hate this story, but at the same time, that's the situation. I think it's fine. I know people are saying in the stream team that he isn't vaccinated.
Yeah, I wanted to clarify something, Tass, because in the statement, the NBA said participants at the event were required to be vaccinated or have a negative COVID-19 test result. And I think that last part is important there. Especially with Braun, because he is not on record. He's almost refusing to answer the question. It's his right to people are asking, are you vaccinated? Are you going to get vaccinated? And all that. And he sort of like keeps skirting around that issue. And, you know, we could debate whether public figures have more of a responsibility to publicly get vaccinated, someone with LeBron's status and all that. But yeah, that was an interesting part in that statement, I thought, that they said everybody was vaccinated there, or, you know, they had a negative COVID-19 test result. And this has happened before with other players, and we're not he doesn't need to be fined or suspended or anything like that.
Yeah, because he still is undergoing testing, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. So, but the league is saying in their statement, like, other guys have done these things and have not been penalized. And I think when they say that over the last little bit, with following the protocols of either being at an outdoor event, or again, they're vaccinated, or have at least taken the test and done negative. That's what I think. Trey, what is this news at all?
I mean, it's obviously news because it's LeBron and he's at a party with Drake, who's hugely famous, and Michael B. Jordan, who's hugely famous. It's not the same if, you know, Mason Plumlee is going to an event for bio armor body fuel or something. There's some, I don't know, who's a famous Detroit actor? Shy McBride is a big Midwest guy. If it's Mason Plumlee and Shy McBride, we're not following up on this, but you have to because it's LeBron. People just want to know if he's vaccinated, though. That's really all that people care about at this point. And I don't think we're going to get the answer, because there was no clarification in the statement from the NBA, despite the fact that they kind of tried to clarify things. We just want to hear LeBron say, yeah, I got vaccinated, and I think other people should too. But that's up to him to decide if he's actually going to say something about it.
Yeah, I agree. Whether he's been vaccinated or not, just tell us one way or the other, because not by hiding away from it and not answering, I think that just creates more confusion. So, you know, if he chooses not to, fine. That's his responsibility. I think it's silly, but I would just like him to clarify it so that people aren't left guessing.
Yeah, I think he's giving you his answer when he's not
by
giving
saying,
his answer.
Yeah, that he hasn't been, it sounds like.
I don't see if he was vaccinated, why he wouldn't tell you he was vaccinated. So.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. But it's just because it's LeBron, and the LeBron haters out there want him suspended and banned and all that, because they think that that's what he deserves. But if he did pass a negative test like everyone was supposed to when everyone else was vaccinated, then he shouldn't have been suspended. I think the NBA made the right choice in that case.
Mm-hmm. So there it is. Let us know, newsworthy or not, all three of those headlines. Clarkson winning sixth man, Mitchell upset with the Jazz, and LeBron not going to be penalized at all for attending a tequila brand event. What was the tequila? Is it his? I mean, whose is it? Drake's? Is it his?
Well, he's got a part of it.
Okay. Well, what is it? What's the brand? I mean, I don't need to give
it
free publicity.
I forget what the name
was. Okay, don't worry about it. Yeah, I'm just thirsty right now. It's early, though. JD, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the night. Wow.
Twitter.
Yes, tweet of the night. This was a no-brainer. we should go back to yesterday's tweet of the night where Kavitha Davison went down to MSG and sat behind this person who had a very large hat.
Yep.
So bit of good. A knob move. I thought it might be Eddie, right? Because it looks like Eddie, the movie Eddie, is like, has got some dreads happening there. And also, it kind of looks like her seats, right? If I remember that movie correctly.
Oh,
where,
yeah.
Where
not bad.
Pretty good seats.
Yeah. It's very close. I think similar. Eddie had worse seats. So like, there are a few rows back. Yeah. Super, super close, you're right.
Yeah. So anyways, then that got us talking about hats, and Lee pulled out his, what is this, a stovetop hat or something? It's a very tall hat. It's an obnoxious hat to sit behind. And then, of course, for some reason, inexplicably, at the end of the show, I think it was Tass who called out for everybody to send us pictures of their hats.
Yep.
So,
send us your hats.
All right.
And we got some.
Okay. We got some dumb hats to look at.
We got some dumb hats to look at. So let's get into it. Here's Ethan.
Oh.
He just says, Ethan Gill, love my hat.
That's
fire.
Nice.
That's a nice looking
good
hat.
Look, man.
Yeah, that's like an Indiana Jones style right there. That's nice.
It's a bordering on Pharrell, like the height of it.
Kind
of
tall. Kind of tall. Bit.
Looking like an Arby's hat almost.
Yeah. Shout out to Arby's. We love
it. I love my hat.
This one's from Tom Frederick. Nice. Now, Tom, whatever. You're fishing.
Yeah.
You got a hat on. Big deal. Yeah. You're just showing us the fish. Okay. Yeah. We're all very nice impressed with your fish.
Yeah, this one's about the fish, not the hat. Come on, Tom.
I'm surprised he didn't just shoot that one to Trey. Yeah, and he just put it to No Dugs. But I thought he might have thought, if I can slip this one into Trey, he's definitely going to put it on the show. But it got in anyway. So well done, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty nice bass too, man. Congrats.
Yeah, very good, very good. Okay, here's Brent Ferrari, our buddy Brent Ferrari.
Okay, what's this?
Many years ago, I won possibly the greatest hat ever at a Flying J truck stop, and it says it's yellow, and it looks like it might be a Peep branded hat, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
It's got a sort of a duck face on it and some polka dots on top. It's maybe the ugliest hat.
Happy Easter.
Yeah.
Happy Easter on the bill.
Hold on. He won it?
Yeah.
Won the truck stop? Like, what the hell?
I think he lost that
on
competition, whatever it was.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
That's
okay.
Great.
So here's Tim Moran. Now, this is Owen, maybe his son. And it was wacky hat day at school, and he's got three hats on. Now, Owen, I think the Animal Crossing hat would have been fine, right?
Because it's wacky.
Yeah. If you're in a pinch, though, if you're in a pinch and it's wacky hat day, wear three hats.
Yeah, it's smart.
Yeah, it's a good move. It's a good move. Okay, Devin sent us, I don't know, 50 hats? So I've just picked one of his daughter. Just sitting calmly and collectively as I walk into the room and notice she's just sitting there with a bucket on her head, completely covering her face.
I hate to be at Lee Ellis. I'm scrolling on my phone. I have a photo of my buddy Dub that's very similar to this. I'll maybe try and get it for tomorrow's show. I got to go back and find it. Oh, that's great.
Cool. All right, let's get to Muhammad here. Muhammad Hassan.
Oh, yeah.
Now, listen, Muhammad, I don't know you. This is the only picture I've ever seen of you, but this is the best you've ever looked.
Oh, my God.
He's got like a white fedora on. He's on the beach in Mexico. He says, I wore it once and left it in Mexico. I assume by accident, because this is an awesome hat. Very good look, Muhammad. Okay,
he's got a bit of
good travel hat.
A bit of a Graydon Gordian look to him.
A little bit.
But Muhammad was waiting for something like this to show off this pose. Yeah. I mean, these people aren't sending us in their photos of the hats. They're just sending in their favorite photos. It's awesome.
Totally. Everybody looks good in hats. Okay, here's Amelia Person. This is me graduating with the so-called student mosa. Shout out to the IKEA guy off the top of the show. It's tradition in Sweden to wear this, and literally everyone has one. It's special for sure. And it's sort of like a yacht rock captain's hat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'll say this. I thought, okay, this is kind of silly, maybe, I guess, but it's way better than our grad hats, you know, the North American.
The mortarboard.
Yeah. I would love to have one of these, just a sea of grads wearing heading to a yacht rock concert, you know?
It looks like you're going to a party, no doubt.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, these are great. Yeah. You could rewear this. You know, I always hear that about, you know, like an outfit you have to get for an event. Oh, I could wear this somewhere else.
Yeah.
You usually don't, but you could wear a student mosa somewhere else, I Absolutely. Do think. Especially a yacht rock concert.
Absolutely. Yep. Okay, here's John Horn. He sent this one. He's a longtime fan of the show. I don't know if this is him or his son. It just says boom. And it's just the cutest little guy wearing a trapper hat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
You have this, I mean, JD, basically.
I have this, yeah, yeah. Of course. Nice, yeah. I think every Canadian should have this because it gets cold.
Yep.
Hear it. All right. Couple more here. This is Mojo Morrison. This is a power look.
Oh, I love this hat.
I love this hat. You know, let's not pick genders here. I think it might be a woman's hat. It might be geared to women, but you know what? He pulls it off. And I can see him. His Instagram has a Canadian flag, but also the Trinidad Tobago. And I can see this on the beaches in Trinidad Tobago. Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah!
So, and finally, we have Pierre. His girlfriend is wearing a hat that was given to him at a place called Dick's Last Resort. It's a paper hat. It looks like a chef's hat, and it says on it in marker, "Will fart for food." So I guess this is a thing that they do at this place. They just write weird shit on your hat, and you have to wear it while you're eating your dinner, I guess. So
nice.
Dick's Very Last nice. Resort.
Dick's Last Resort.
Yeah. Shout out to all the hats out there, and I see...
I was gonna show you. That's the one I was going to show. That's my buddy Dub in Portugal. He had torn his ACL prior to the trip, so he had the old walking boot on there. Not a great city to attend when you have a big boot like that. A lot of walking in Portugal, a lot of cobblestone, but yeah, similar to
this.
Is this
Botter Street?
No, it's not on Botter Street.
He's not wearing a sweater.
Yeah.
JD.
Now, how high does it go up? Because it's cut off at the top there.
That's the thing. So he's actually not... that is like one of those like shoots where they're doing construction. Like down a building, like somebody comes with a couple bricks on his head there. Yeah, several stories up.
This is a really tall hat.
This photo reminds me of a Red Hot Chili Peppers music video.
Oh, yeah, totally. This needs a single sock.
Right. You can put that boot on his head.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be great. All right, thanks for sending in your crazy hats. We really appreciate it. Great tweet.
I brought a couple of wacky hats real quick. I see Lee's got his on. I brought my bucket hat. I thought I would have wackier hats. You know, this one's fine.
No, that's just cool.
Yeah,
this is like a kind of an inspector hat.
I like how your shoulders keeping your headphones on.
Well, my shoulders are actually trying to keep my earphones on right now.
You look like Jim Henson.
Yeah.
Doesn't he?
Totally.
Cool. I never knew how important my neck was to my general look right now. I don't know, it's looking very weird.
All right.
But this is my other wacky hat I like.
Okay,
you guys remember this?
Yeah.
A big logo Starters hat. This to me now looks like a NASCAR hat.
Yeah,
at this point. So I'm getting more into wearing it as I get more and more into F1. I feel like this will be my America's hat.
Matches that shirt you're wearing today.
Yeah,
too.
Thank you.
Now I gotta go find another photo of all of us wearing those hats.
Yeah.
In a hotel room in Chicago, if I remember correctly. Like we tried to recreate the cover of Queen. The album cover with the four heads, like all close. We're all wearing those big old hats. Starters logo hat. We'll save it for tomorrow. Three games on tonight, guys. Celtics Nets, Lakers Suns, Mavericks Clippers. Tess, which one are you most excited for tonight from those three game twos?
Give me the one on NBA TV, baby. The Mavs and the Clippers. Do the Clippers make a starting lineup change? Give me a little Serge Ibaka in there. I just wonder, they got smashed at home. I know it was tied with 3 minutes left, but when you lose by double digits at home in game one, that's a smash job. So I just want to see how they come back. And I wonder if they changed that starting lineup a little bit. They got to throw some on Nikola Batum in there. Ty Lue's probably not the type of guy to switch it up off the bat. It kind of screams a little desperation, but maybe it's the finishing lineup. They just got to play harder, which is pretty simple to say. But maybe Serge Ibaka isn't playing to his capabilities, but I want my Serge out there. That's what they got him for.
Coach Lue, I thought, said in so many words that you're going to see Kawhi and Luka a lot more in game two. They here should. Because he was barely on him at all. Wonder if we'll see more Ibaka, like you said, maybe a little more Terrence Mann, get a little energy going in there. We'll see what Lou's got up his sleeve in game two. It's a must win. That's what you said, right, Lee? Clips got to win game two here tonight.
They absolutely have to win. They can't go to Dallas down 0-2. I mean, the series won't be over, but it'll just make so much more of that situation potentially combustible about how they respond under pressure. Didn't do a good job of it last season. Didn't do a good job of it in game one.
And Trey, Lakers-Suns game two. Obviously, Suns taking care of business in game one with the 9-point victory. Really, really dominant performance all around both sides. Does LeBron have a monster game in him tonight? Or can the Suns go back to L.A. up 2-0 and just hold home court? What do you think?
Two biggest questions for me are going to be Chris Paul's shoulder. What's going on? That was just such a strange play. And then to see the way he was struggling to lift the ball above his shoulders for the entirety of that game, is there any sort of lingering side effects? I guess we'll find out pretty early on. But he did play in game one, so at least he'll be out there, even if he's a little bit compromised. The Suns were still able to take the win. The other big thing is DeAndre Ayton was incredible in game one, 21 points, 16 rebounds, was able to play 36 minutes. I assume LeBron will have a bounce back game two, and I'm assuming the same for Anthony Davis, which means it's going to be imperative for Ayton to have the kind of game he had in game one if the Suns are going to be able to win another one here.
Can't wait to watch him. Can't wait to talk about him with you guys on tomorrow's podcast. Join us live on YouTube at 10 a.m. Eastern. Also, hitting the beach tomorrow afternoon on Wednesday, so get your questions in. You still got time. Email them in nodunks@theathletic.com, or you can tweet them in at nodunksinc, or leave them in the YouTube comments below this video. Fun show. Great hats. Enjoy the coverage tonight, guys, and we'll be back tomorrow morning. Clipper Bros!
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, folks. Two things to say. I hope we see some Marc Gasol tonight. Get some spacing to that Lakers offense. And the second thing, anything can be a hat.
Embrace the day, people. That's a cool hat. You could